Next case is 05334, Brian Hinckley versus Cleveland Clinic Foundation. Mr. Roberts.
Good morning.
Mr. Chief Justice, your honors. Nice to be here. This is a medical malpractice case. The facts are relatively straightforward. Lisa Hinckley suffers a brain bleed and collapses at home in March 8th, 1997. She is transported to the Cleveland Clinic. They have essentially brain surgery on March 10th. Her condition unfortunately deteriorates and she starts to experience symptomatic vasospasm. And that's essentially where the blood vessels in the brain start to spasm and contract, make it more difficult for blood to get to the brain tissue. If that continues, ischemia, essentially the loss of oxygen follows where you have brain damage. The treatment for symptomatic vasospasm is called this triple H therapy, and it's essentially a fire hose kind of analogy where they increase the blood pressure, they increase blood volume, they essentially put in blood thinners to kind of force the blood through the clamped vein to get oxygen to the brain. All of the experts at trial testified that triple H therapy was the required course of treatment required by the standard of care to treat symptoms of vasospasm. The plaintiff contended at trial essentially that the Cleveland Clinic did not start their Triple H therapy soon enough, and when they did start it, they didn't implement it correctly, and that essentially precipitated, unfortunately, Lisa suffering a stroke on March 21st, which left her paralyzed and essentially a vegetable with both legs being amputated. So it's a tragic, heart-tearing story. Essentially, the question in this case is whether the defendant improperly used learned treatises at trial in opening, redirect, and in closing. To answer that question, the court must be aware of three things. Obviously, the transcript. Because a lot of these distinctions in the brief are very subtle, and you have to go to the transcript to see what was really going on. Two, Evidence Rule 706, which has been the subject of the attention of this court fairly recently in the Beard case, which more or less says that learned treatises can be used, but only coming in for impeachment to the extent that the expert who is being impeached relies upon them, or to the extent that there's other authority, other testimony that they're reliable authority.
Counsel.
Yes, Judge.
What rule of law are you asking us to adopt, that you may freely use treatises in cross-examination, you may pick and choose phrases from those treatises, but the opposing counsel may not rehabilitate their witness with phrases that may fully explain their answer from the same treatises?
That is not the proposition.
That seems to be the result of what you are asking us to do. So how would you have us phrase it that presents a very unfair result?
Well, essentially, can I postpone that, Judge, for 15 seconds responding to that?
Maybe. I'll see what your
answer
is.
Maybe. Okay. Give me a little bit of rope here before I can respond to that, because I want to refer specifically to how the learned treatises were used, okay? The first is in opening statement, where the learned treatises were essentially put on an Elmo and projected up on a huge screen on trial transcripts numbers 285, 288, 296, in front of the jury where they're being offered as substantive evidence. Okay,
That is not, however, an issue on appeal, correct?
Let me see. No, that is the issue. The assignment of error included the erroneous use of learned treatises, not only on redirect, okay, but also in opening and in closing.
Okay, but you yourself used learned treatises in closing, as the Court of Appeals pointed out.
Yes, that is true. But by that time, essentially, the horse was out of the barn. And so the plaintiff didn't have any... And the plaintiff had to respond in like kind to what the defendant was doing. But
and isn't that their argument on rebuttal, that you let the horse out of the barn, so they had an opportunity to put it back in the barn on rebuttal? That's the same argument they're making.
No. Well, let me see. They might be making a number of arguments, but that's not accurate. Can you give me another 10 seconds, Judge?
All right.
Okay. You can reel me in if I start to stray too far. But I'm talking about opening, where you essentially put it up on a screen, use it as substantive evidence. I'm talking about redirect, okay, and how it was used on redirect here, Judge, is not essentially you have someone who is impeached, okay, they come back on redirect and essentially use the article not to correct or clarify, as the Court of Appeals talked about. We aren't talking about a situation where it was deceptively used, for example, in cross-examination, and you say, well, gosh, hold on, let me read the sentence that you left out here. Okay, that's not what was going on here. Take a look at transcript 325 and 330. I'm sorry, 1325 and 1330. Because what was used on redirect is they read a portion of the article that didn't have anything to do with the cross. Okay, they were just using essentially the witness, if you will, as a stooge, okay, to read other parts of this article that hadn't been employed in impeachment. Okay, so it's not like, well, gosh, this was just a matter of trying to correct and clarify. If you take a look at 1330 and 1325, that's not what's going on. And then in closing, to essentially use the same Elmo presentation and essentially show article after article after article.
Okay. So you are not objecting to the ability to use a learned treatise in rehabilitation? You are simply objecting to the way they did it here as a factual dispute?
That is in part correct. I have no issue, Your Honor, if the plaintiff essentially, and this is what the Court of Appeals, and they referred to some cases to this effect, deceptively uses, okay, a portion of this. And they said, well, gosh, should the other side be able to come back on redirect, even though 706 really doesn't speak of this, but should they be able to come back and say, now, wait a minute here, that's not fair, okay? You got to read the next sentence. I've got no problem with that, Judge, but that's not what happened here.
Okay, so are we down then to really a factual dispute over what happened and not really a principle of law?
Let me see. What we're down to is
really
whether...
You don't really object to the principle of law that it can be used to rehabilitate.
It can be used to rehabilitate if it's used to clarify and to explain, okay? But that's not what we have here. Okay, because essentially Rule 706, it's pretty simple, actually, Judge, and you've been through this medical malpractice trials, and I can tell you this wouldn't have gone on in your courtroom. But what 706 is, and it's as significant as what it says as what it does not say, okay, it says, okay, you can only use these learned treatises in such a fashion, okay? Now, what it doesn't say, which is important, is, gosh, an acknowledgement that learned treatises are powerful, can have a huge impact, okay? And what it also says by implication is, and as a result of that, since the learned treatise that can be shown up, okay, and used as substantive evidence here on this huge screen as you walk these people through it, is that it presents powerful testimony that can't be cross-examined, okay? And what happened here, Justice Stratton, okay, is, and it started, and Mr. Kuwiki objected to all of this. But what started here from opening statement on was the use of these substantive treatises, okay, as substantive evidence, okay, with picture after picture after picture where it's read for pages, okay.
Mr. Roberts, is it fair to say that you also did that during the trial?
Let me see. We did not do that, Judge, except until closing. Until
there,
closing.
There is a page, I believe, from the appellee's brief indicating at least 9 instances, allegedly, that you used literature from Dr. Mayberg, Dr. Originitano, Dr. Awad, Dr. Castle, and others. Did that occur?
In closing, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so you did it in closing, but not at all during the trial?
Correct.
Thank
Correct.
You.
By the time we were
coroner. Counsel, you used learned treatises for the purposes of impeachment of the clinic's witnesses.
Oh, yeah, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
That's
and,
what, okay,
and
I'm sorry.
So you did use it throughout the trial, and appropriately. And,
yes,
and,
yeah. You what know. I was talking about, because essentially the Court of Appeals said, gosh, both parties committed error in the use of the learned treatises in closing. That's really what I was responding to. And we did, as Justice Stratton said. But but when I said that, the horse is out of the barn by that point in time. By that point in time, what has really happened here is that the defendant has allowed learned treatises, through the use of learned treatises, to create a third expert. Okay.
Well, and, counsel, I'm reading from the appellate opinion. It says, in each instance, in the case at bar, the clinic used the same learned treatise during redirect that was used on cross-examination, and it was used to rehabilitate the clinic's expert by putting into context the impeaching statement. The trial court did not err. Now, you stated that that the clinic used completely different portions of the same treatise.
Yes.
Are you stating that, you know, the clinic expert was questioned on subject matter A, and then there was a totally different subject matter examined on redirect?
Absolutely. Bingo. Court of Appeals is wrong on that. By the time the Court of Appeals gets to that issue at pages 13 or 14, they start to lose energy.
But that's abuse of discretion, is it not? Or it's not that's not a legal issue for us to decide, is it?
No, Your Honor.
I voted to bring the case in on Proposition Law 3, as you know, because your Proposition Law says it's prejudicial error to permit the use of learned treatises during opening statement, redirect examination, closing argument, and to publish treatises to the jury. But really, what you're complaining about is not that it was used in redirect, but that it was used inappropriately. But that's a question of error law. I mean, error, isn't it? It's not a legal issue, is it?
The issue that I want the court to adopt is essentially the application and construction of 706. Okay. The Court of Appeals, when they glossed over that, and Your Honor, 1 minute, you have to take a look at 1325, where essentially it was used on cross, and then 1330, where they brought in a whole new paragraph topic. Okay. Okay. That is contrary to, okay, essentially Rule 706. Okay. What I was responding with Justice Stratton's, I think that if one wants to be glib about this, to say, well, okay, I mean, even though 706 may not address it, we certainly don't want to encourage any kind of chicanery here, and so essentially the other side should be able to rehabilitate if essentially the plaintiff, for instance, misreads the article. Okay, I've got no problem with that as an issue, but that's not what went on here. And when you take a look at, okay, how the learned treatises were used in opening and in closing, Your Honor, okay, it goes far beyond Rule 706. Rule 706 says the learned treatises are a stick of dynamite, okay? They are so powerful, okay, and we're only going to allow them in this narrow, narrow way.
So the principle of law you really want us to write is that when a party uses a learned treatise to rehabilitate its expert after cross-examination, that the party must confine the questioning or the use of the treatise to a direct response to the cross-examination.
Yes, Your Honor, although the assignment of error addresses the use of learned treatises here in opening and in closing with the use of the Elmo device and so forth. And essentially, this was a situation where the trial judge, it got away from him, from opening statement on. And that kind of set the tempo of the case where all of a sudden you have a third expert here who, okay, with the use of learned treatises here, the defendant was able to solicit and to try to present to the jury testimony that they couldn't get any other expert to say, namely the Triple H therapy was not the appropriate standard of care and so forth. All that was a misuse of the learned treatises document. Okay. This was a situation where the case got away from the trial judge.
It's just that it doesn't appear from the Court of Appeals' long opinion that was argued. to the Court of Appeals. It doesn't seem to touch that issue, does it? I don't see it in the.
No. I mean, the Court of Appeals addressed the use of the Lena treatises in opening,
right.
in closing.
On the redirect, I mean, just on the redirect. It doesn't seem to, just one paragraph, and it says, well, it was okay because it was used to rehabilitate.
The Court of Appeals said, gosh, we've looked at this, and it was used to correct and clarify wrong. 1325 and 1330. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Mr. Leek.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, my name is Doug Leek, and I'm here on behalf of the defendant appellee, the Cleveland Clinic Foundation. In this case, the 8th District's decision appropriately determined that there was no error that warranted a reversal of this unanimous verdict in favor of the Cleveland Clinic. Although the 8th District addressed 8 assignments of error, the one at issue here is the use of learned treaties. And in this case, the 8th District appropriately determined 3 issues: that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in permitting the use of learned treaties during redirect examination for the rehabilitation of its witnesses. Second, the trial court did not abuse its discretion in permitting the use of learned treaties as demonstrative evidence to be displayed to the jury and not admitted for deliberation. Lastly, it determined that there was no prejudicial effect of the use of learned treaties by both parties during both opening statements and closing arguments. With regard to learned treaties, this court is well aware that there's a trend in Ohio to expand the use of learned treaties. Just recently, the proposed amendments to the evidentiary rules intends to repeal Evidence Rule 706 and adopt the federal rules, specifically Evidence Rule 803.18. Of importance, the staff notes to the proposed amendments cites this particular case for the proposition that learned treaties can be used for redirect examination for rehabilitation
purposes. It's
treatises,
is it not? You're saying, we're talking about treatises, not treaties, aren't we?
Learned treaties. But the proposition is that you use literature on redirect examination. And the reason this case is cited in the staff notes of the proposed amendment is the 8th District's opinion is correct. The 8th District analyzed this case by going to Michigan to a very similar case, Hilgendorf versus St. John Hospital in 2001,
Counsel,
and incorporated.
Yes. I think that what you're stating is true about the use of learned treatises in this context and the way they can be used to rehabilitate, and you know, certainly the theory is correct. The problem, I think, in what was stated in opposing counsel's portion of oral argument, it sounded like this trial was pretty much a brawl, and there was a lack of control about what was going on. And in fact, the appellate court states that the use in opening and closing by both parties, the permission or the allowance of that was error, but it was not prejudicial because both parties did it, et cetera, and the outcome of the case could not be shown to have been different had it not occurred. But my point is that, is this anything more than error correction?
Yes, Your Honor. On that issue, the prejudicial, that only relates to the opening statements and closing arguments. And the transcript speaks for itself. And let me reference Dr. Awad's reference. That article was used in opening statements by the appellants. And what the Court of Appeals determined was the burden is to show not only did the trial court abuse its discretion, but that that error materially affected the substantial rights of the party and denied him a fair trial. And yes, that is the Court of Appeals' interpretation that there was no prejudicial error because both parties were granted the same latitude in the use in opening statements and closing arguments. But that doesn't present a legal question here. The legal question before this court is really the use of the learned treaties for rehabilitation purposes during redirect examination. And the 8th District's analysis is legally sound. Fundamental fairness says if a witness is cross-examined with a piece of literature, that that witness should be able to explain to the jury why other segments of that literature either apply or do not apply. To allow a party to use literature only on cross-examination would be unfair, because that would go uncontradicted, unchallenged, if not allowed to be rehabilitated.
Well, I think your opposing counsel pretty much agrees with you on the use of on cross-examination or redirect. I don't think we have an argument here.
Yes, that's why the 8th District goes on to set parameters on the use of literature on redirect examination. And those parameters are, the first one is the literature that's used on cross-examination that's going to be used on redirect examination must be the same piece of literature. There is no dispute that that same literature in this case that was used by plaintiff's counsel was used by counsel for the Cleveland Clinic upon redirect examination.
Do you find that the rule provides for the use during opening statement?
No, and I think that the Court of Appeals recognized that there was error. And that's why they found no prejudicial error, because it was pervasive by both parties. And on that issue, they opened up the door, number one, in opening statements and in closing arguments. And another,
you say they opened up the door, how so?
The transcript speaks for itself that during opening statements, the appellant's counsel used medical literature, and what the Court of Appeals recognized.
So the fact is that the breach of the rule in connection with the use of learned treatises began with the plaintiff's opening? Is that what you're telling us?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then it was followed by both parties throughout the trial?
Yes, Your Honor. And another reason there was no prejudicial error is that the jury was repeatedly instructed that opening statements and closing arguments by counsel is not evidence. Mm-hmm. And so it goes to the old established law
counsel,
of abuse of discretion.
But does this lead us to have some rule of law that we should write in this case?
Not at all, Your Honor. And I only address that issue because it is one that they are relying upon. The proposition of law really at issue is twofold here, which we've addressed, the redirect examination. And in this case, the use of it was within the parameters as set forth by the Court of Appeals. Same literature, and then every time on redirect examination, the question on redirect examination was, can you please expand on the literature used during cross-examination? Expand on it. Put it in the context for the jury to see. Because to disallow the witness to be rehabilitated would defeat the whole purpose of the fact-finding mission of the jury.
Well, counsel, it seems on that issue that you and Mr. Roberts agree, and it's down to a factual dispute as to what we'll find in the record as to what the nature of redirect was. I don't think he and you disagree that as long as you're using the same book or pamphlet, the question is, can you bounce all over that and get into things that were not opened up with the cross, or are you sticking with where the cross went? And that, I mean, that's a general rule of redirect, right? That's a basic evidence rule. I want to take you back to the opening, though. Mr. Roberts claimed that the defense put up on a screen in opening portions of some treatise. And apparently we have a dispute about what the plaintiff did to start all of this, but I'm wondering how the defense could be so quick as to have something ready to flip on up on a screen based on some comment of the plaintiff's lawyer in opening.
Yes, Your Honor. To be so quick on that would go to the other legal issue before this court on the use of learned treatises for demonstrative evidence. There was demonstrative evidence prepared for the purposes of cross-examination and impeachment purposes. At the disposal of defense counsel was medical literature, articles discovered throughout the entire case that was anticipated that was going to be used by appellant's counsel. So at their disposal were demonstrative evidence, and that is one of the things
okay.
here.
You, I take it you do agree there's no, the rule would not appear to permit the use of learned treatise in opening statement.
Exactly. And
would the proposed change in the rule permit that, the federal rule?
Yes, Your Honor, it will, because what will happen with the adoption of the federal rule under 803.18 is that there will be the use of learned treatises, medical literature during direct examination by witnesses that rely upon it or who are cross-examined on it, as long as it's still recognized as a reliable authority. So the trend is that in opening statements, if you anticipate one of your experts will be relying upon a particular medical literature and will recognize it as a reliable authority and will testify to that in the case in chief, that the day will come when it's effective July 1st, 2006, that opening statements, you will be able to do that. That does not apply in this case.
Okay.
This issue comes down to the Court of Appeals' interpretation of the record, the review of the record, that there was no prejudicial error for many reasons. They used it with the same latitude. Opening statements, closing arguments are not evidence, and the jury was instructed on that. And the burden
well,
is—
Well, but you would agree you can win your case or lose it in voir dire and opening statement many times. So it may not be evidence, but it can be so important. I don't think it's an automatic, just with that blanket statement, it's not evidence, that you could say anything that happened in opening statement is per se not prejudicial.
Well, and Your Honor, that's why counsel for the Cleveland Clinic was prepared for any time that the appellants came forward with medical literature that they learned about during discovery, either through the experts or through witnesses at their disposal, were boxes and demonstrative evidence.
The problem for us on appellate review is that's getting us down into factual determinations.
Exactly.
And review of abuse of discretion, first of all, by the
exactly. It goes back
the
to
trial
the,
judge.
Exactly. The longstanding law as to abuse of discretion is not only do you have to prove abuse of discretion, but you have to prove prejudicial error. And that burden is upon the appellants, and the Court of Appeals fully appreciate it and address that issue. And in its decision specifically referenced 9 times in which the literature was used. And that's, as you say, a factual issue by the Court of Appeals made that determination that there was no prejudicial error. The proposition of law truly before this court is the use during redirect examination. And on that issue, the decision in the 8th District is well-reasoned and legally sound. It went so far as to go to Michigan and go to a state that had the same evidentiary rules, same facts. It also went to New York in the Tribeca-Schneider case. It went to Tennessee. And for today is the first time I have heard a concession by the appellants that it is appropriate to use a literature that was used during cross-examination for redirect examination for rehabilitation purposes. That is a concession made here. And what the Court of Appeals found was the use was within the parameters as set forth in those other jurisdictions. Same literature was used, and it was not beyond the scope of the cross-examination.
Let me ask you, on the issue of displaying the evidence, displaying the excerpts from the treatise, 706 seems to be somewhat restrictive. If admitted for impeachment, the statements may be read for impeachment. The statements may be read into evidence, but shall not be received as exhibits.
Exactly.
And what was done here after impeachment, or for if admitted for impeachment? So here it was on redirect, was it not?
Exactly. The issue at hand was the use of the medical literature as demonstrative evidence while it was used for cross-examination purposes. We already discussed how it was used by both parties in opening and closing. Evidence Rule 706 precludes that medical literature can be admitted and sent to the jury. That was never done. There were blow-ups of the medical literature that were used for cross-examination purposes for impeachment, which is permissive under Evidence Rule 706. And 706 specifically provides that you can read into evidence that literature that was used for impeachment purposes. And that's what the demonstrative evidence was for impeachment purposes.
Well, the Court of Appeals says appellants argue that allowing the clinic to visually display the treatises to the jury was an abuse of discretion. We disagree. And then it goes on to say that the rule doesn't say how it's read into evidence.
Exactly.
Which is, what's your strongest argument? It would seem to me the rule means you sit there and you read it, actually read it into the transcript rather than something else.
Well, no, I think that's the equivalent is demonstrative evidence. It's like using a discovery deposition for the purposes of cross-examination. You're using that to read and cross-examine a witness, but oftentimes you will blow up that deposition transcript to amplify it for the jury. That's simply what happened here, where the witnesses were being cross-examined with medical literature, and it was being amplified as demonstrative evidence. And the Court of Appeals appropriately distinguished between displaying evidence versus admitting evidence, and that's not what happened here. No literature was ever admitted and sent back to the jury for deliberations. Mm-hmm. And on behalf of the clinic, we ask that this court affirm the well-reasoned decision of the Court of Appeals and the unanimous verdict.
Thank you, Mr. Leek.
Thank you.
Mr. Roberts, you may take 30 seconds.
Relinquish that time to Mr. Wicky.
Well, yes, he hadn't checked in, but go ahead.
Thanks, Your Honor. Unlike Mr. Roberts and Mr. Leek, I was at the brawl, as you called it, Your Honor. I will tell you that the prejudicial impact of the misuse of treatises in this case is premised on three particular things that happened. One, they used it in opening statement. We did not, contrary to what Mr. Leek said. We mentioned learned treatises in opening statement briefly, solely for the purpose of showing that the standard of care was fixed as of a certain date. That was not disputed by anyone. Second, the defendant used the learned treatises inappropriately in arguing that the standard of care did not require Triple H therapy. This is exactly contrary to what this court held in Beard, where they said that you can't use learned treatises for specific substantive statements of law, and that's exactly what they did time and time again, particularly statements of law that weren't supported by their own experts, to wit, stating that Triple H therapy was not the standard of care. Their own experts time and time again conceded that it was the standard of care. Thirdly, they put theirs up and they displayed it. Contrary to what the rule specifically says, it may be read into evidence. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion, Marsh. We will take a brief recess.